Contrary to popular wishes, Mike Saunders is still not back from Germany.
Actually, you know, as wonderful as
John
Austro
Lennon,
Bavaria
get
was,
out of the room.
Contrary to popular wishes, Mike Saunders is back from Germany. Hooray, he's back. This is episode 15 of season 2 of the Tux Radar podcast. I am Paul Hudson.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
Und ich bin der Mike Saunders.
We've got a whole episode of this, guys. And actually, especially in this podcast, we're doing Ubuntu, and more Ubuntu, which is going to get lots of hate. At the same time, we're doing reporting back on our NetHack dare, while Oracle is suing Google. And we've got an all-new section, because we didn't post an open ballot again, because we're lazy. It's very exciting.
It is. Looking forward to it.
Yes. Don't forget, buy Linux for Mac, because it's great. You can subscribe at tuxradar.com/subscribe. And actually, we've just put out a fantastic free gift in the magazine. If your last chance to buy it was yesterday, by the time this goes out, which was the PHP mini book, which put another awesome one which came out today, as time goes online, which is a Linux format / distro watch Snakes and Ladders game. Mm-hmm. Very exciting, very silly.
Fun for all the family.
Completely silly. But buy it and like it, because or give it to kids or whatever, because it's great fun.
Right, it's time to kick off the Ubuntu Propaganda Fest, which we call news.
We are Canonical staff, after all, aren't we?
We are. We're Canonical staff, and also paid by Canonical.
And Microsoft. We're really rich.
Yeah. I don't know why we're doing this. Yeah.
In fact, we're not even recording this. We have minions to pretend to be Andrew, Paul, Mike, and the other one.
So rich we paid John Lennon to make our podcast. Yeah.
So, Ubuntu then. Ubuntu 10.10.
It's coming.
It's not long now. Summer's gone.
It's not long. But
nights
there's
are drawing in.
They've decided that they're going to add gesture support.
Oh, fantastic.
But it's not all rosy, because if it's got that multi-touch thing, then they might get sued.
Oh, no.
So you're allowed single-touch gestures.
Yeah.
Isn't that called moving the mouse pointer?
I don't know.
Left. Great.
Up a bit. Up a bit. Oh, yes.
This new click gesture.
Wow.
What devices are these gestures going to work on?
On your screen.
Oh, wow. Just on normal screens.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. How they managed it?
Because they're great. Ubuntu are great. Everything they do is awesome.
They always pay promptly, too.
Hang on. Seriously, though. There was some company tried to sue some other company for including multi-touch gestures. I can't remember which one.
It was the Apple one.
They didn't
Apple
sue them.
And Palm.
They didn't sue them. They said grrr. A lot.
Didn't they sue HTC? Is that the... I can't remember what the HTC thing is.
No, I don't think
anymore.
It is. Yeah, it's about really obscure stuff. Never actually... Hey, multi-touch.
Right.
They said they patented it, didn't they, Mike? You know this quote exactly off the top of your head, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, when Jobs announced the iPhone, he described multi-touch technology, and he said, sort of like, boy, have we patented this. Yeah, go. To making it clear in the long run. But that was like the start of 2007.
He probably said patented it, didn't he, really?
Yeah.
Probably, actually.
So they own the concept of touching something with more than one finger at once.
Yes, whoa. Don't do it. Don't pick up anything with multiple fingers.
That's really awesome.
Well, they're worth a lot of money, because the PS3 didn't have Rumble, did it, for a while, because they got super.
No, that was also last gen, if you remember.
Yeah, I know. Who owned that? Someone owned that patent, didn't
they? Yeah, yeah.
Ended up getting paid a lot of money for it.
Brilliant. Well done, them.
You said 10.04.1's out as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Amazing new patch release that fixes all the problems of the first one.
Well, the last one did have some problems, apparently.
Many problems.
Yeah. But I think those people who reported those problems were liars.
Or paid for. Red hat.
No, I think Linux Mint's the one all the money. And the conspiracy theorists.
Isn't Mint thinking of switching to Debian? I think I read that.
No way, really?
Yeah, upstream.
Because of the problems that were in 10.04.
I'm not sure why. They maybe... Debian has paid them switch.
Maybe they read my blog entry about the naming of the trash applet in Mint, where that's three or four different names, depending on how you approach
so
it.
So ashamed.
Yeah.
Maybe they've realised that Ubuntu is just Debian.
Cut
out the middleman.
I don't know. But anyway, before we move on to Debian, the new name for 11.04 has been announced. It begins with N.
Naughty. So,
nerdy.
Naughty.
Newt.
Nautic. Nautic Newt.
Nautical. I like where you're going.
Nautical Newt. Yeah. There we go. Is that it?
Sadly, no.
Oh.
It's Natty Narwhal.
What?
Narwhal, it's like a cross between a whale and a unicorn.
In a Venn diagram, it is.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds pretty cool.
It is quite cool.
But natty.
I did ask our Twitter followers, we're at TuxRadar on Twitter and Atlantica, if you could think of a better name, and or funnier name. And we've got a few answers here if you'd like to hear some.
Yeah.
Dan Jealous said, is it possible there's a funnier name at all? Just quite fair
That's
enough.
That's true. Yeah.
Hugh Taylor, some sort of axe to grind, said, Nasty Nigel.
Oh.
That's a sort of Coronation Street joke, I'm not sure. John Ingram said, Naked Nightingale almost won it for me, but I think I've settled on Nude Newt.
Okay. Okay. Whatever floats your boat.
CTI97, Nutty Needletail. Is that a bird?
Needletail. I'm just going to sit back. Mm-hmm. No?
Go Tun Nan Dan said, Simply replace Natty with Naughty. Naughty,
naughty, naughty.
Naughty, yeah.
I like it. That's awesome.
Van Den said, Narcissistic Nematode.
He's got a good dictionary.
Yeah, a good thesaurus, I think, yeah. Daz Fuller, Nubile Nautilus, Naked Neckbeards, Nosediving Nightingale, and finally, Phelan Whiteley said, Nihilistic Newt.
Nihilistic Newt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nihilism.
Who actually comes up with these names, anyway? Is it just Mark Est sitting around in his
They've got a Perl mind? Script that does it.
Do you remember the way Graham used to make the word searches or crosswords? And that was all like ages ago. Use a bin.
That was it, yeah.
I know it's exactly the same way. So we'll find more and more obscure names coming up over time. They run out of names.
Well, we've got to wonder what they're going to do after Z when they've got zonky xylophone fish or whatever. Even though that's an X.
Well, they'll switch to Hungarian when they have more letters in the alphabet.
Yeah, so you get umlauts and
yeah,
things
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Hopefully for P, they'll go for the obvious alliteration and use pig pony.
We should start petitioning them now, really, shouldn't we, pig pony? You hear that, talk to our listeners, email Mark Shuttleworth and tell him now we want pink pony, a PP.
And it's got to actually include the game pink pony as well.
As the major
Naturally.
Feature.
Yeah.
Right, I think we've spoken about Ubuntu for long enough to satisfy our contractual obligations. So, now onto the news that Debian 6.0, that's version that's Squeeze, has been frozen. And that doesn't mean that it's, you know, really cold and therefore nothing's happening anymore. It just means that they've not going to add any more features and are now going to concentrate their efforts on polishing and refining the stuff that's there already.
That seems like almost a reasonable amount of time since version 5.
No, it was a long time ago. Was it... 18 a year
18
ago,
months. A year ago. Yeah,
but freezing is only half the problem, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, they've stopped adding features. Well done, lads.
It's an important step, though, isn't it? Because, you know, as a Debian release engineer, you can tell you'd be tempted to say, oh, let's add a bit of this and add a bit of that. At some point, you've got to put the hammer down and say, right, that's it. This is what Debian's going to be. Now we've just got to fix the bugs, which is the really boring part.
Yeah, the bit that everybody disappears to the pub with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
yeah.
It takes another to motivate them, Mike. All those Debian guys listening, crying bitter tears now.
Oh, go on, you can do it, because you know it'll be the foundation of the next Ubuntu release.
So those new features that have been added and which will be refined include KDE 4.4.5, GNOME 2.30, and XFCE 4.6.2.
Wow.
No, if they get it out the door pretty soon, that'll be a reasonable
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
Experience, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Firefox 3 or something.
there are some other things, obviously, but that's just...
Firebird.
Those are the things that I wrote down on my piece of paper.
Wow.
So that's Debian. And then now back to more suing action. Oracle has apparently filed a lawsuit against Google because Google has included, or Google may or may not have included, some elements of Java in its Android mobile operating system. What do we think about this?
It's pretty bad, isn't it? I mean,
pretty bad.
Yes, it's very bad. It's awful.
There we go.
It's awful. I mean, I think we've all read the backstory. Is it James Gosling, the creator of Java, on an ex-employee of Sun, of course, on his blog said that when the negotiations for Oracle purchasing Sun were in full flow, and Jonathan Swartz or whoever it was mentioned the Microsoft case where Sun sued Microsoft because of the non-compliance with Java at the time and got billions out of it. Oracle's lawyers, apparently their eyes twinkled at the thought of this kind of money. And Sun has a massive war chest of patented technologies at Oracle's disposal. So it's probably just the tip of the iceberg, quite apart from all the separate ramifications for open source projects and open source like Java.
So basically, on Android, Google has written their own implementation of
Java.
Yes,
yeah, is it their own JVM?
Right.
Oh, no, it's much more complicated than that. it's really quite complicated. What happens is you compile your Java code to JVM on your local Eclipse box. It then gets translated into a different kind of bytecode, which is read by a Dalvik virtual machine. It's not Java. It's not in any way Java. It's not Java bytecode. It's just Java technology stuff.
Right.
Patented bits and pieces, mysteries, known only to Larry Ellison and the Sun team.
Right.
That they've taken. So it's not Java. It's not even the Java class libraries. It's just a class path, I believe, most of the stuff.
Really?
They've done a really good job. They've spent a lot of money making a GPL-free, Java-ish compatible system called Dalvik.
Yeah.
It's not Java.
And that's a lot faster. I mean, yeah, this is the reason why they've done it.
It's not GPL'd. Yeah. That's one of the keys, too.
Right.
Because they could have used OpenJava, which is GPL'd, and had no problems. None of these patents possible under that license. They decided to do it under a license that could be easily closed if a licensee, you know, HTC, wanted to make their own version, whatever.
But they've still got this virtual machine, and that's where obviously Sun and Oracle have a lot of these patents on virtual machine technologies.
Yeah.
Fun.
It's pretty scary. And people are saying it may be the case that Google will pay up to Oracle the money required to license those patents only for Google.
Right.
As in HTC or Samsung or Sony or any other Android maker could be next. And let's face it, Sony have got a lot of money.
Yeah.
So if Oracle was smart, they'd say make exactly that deal and go after Sony next.
Oh.
It's terrifying for the open source community.
I think we should have a great big patent war where, you know, most companies die and then, you know, we'll purge
that's
world
exactly
of this.
The problem is, it's basically the First World War all over again.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. Not literally. We have this wonderful peace system called the Open Innovation Network where people promise not to sue each other.
Mm.
And Oracle are in there and Google are in there. And yet, for some reason, they've completely ignored this treaty and decided to wage war, basically. It's pretty crazy.
Well, it only takes one hungry ostrich.
There you go.
Yeah, when the ostrich gets shot, then everything's in trouble.
So bad.
It's the absurdity of software patents, really. You know, ever since one-click purchases have become acceptable, this is the end result. Destruction.
Well, like I was saying yesterday, Oracle were against software patents sort of 15 years ago. They were campaigning against it. And now they love it, I think, because it's easy
now
money.
They've got lots.
They've got lots. And I wonder whether they've chosen these particularly because there's not much Google can do to respond. They may have thought, well, what are we doing in that space? Nothing at all. Why don't we just get Google and they get a little money?
Yeah.
Can't really counter-sue us because they would have counter-sued already if they had to.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I mean, presumably Google's got its own patent war chest, but it'll be related to...
Very, very small. There was a graph I saw earlier this year which showed the number of patents, things like people like HSE and Google have got... Very, very low. Apple, huge. IBM, gigantic. Microsoft, large.
Right.
Oracle, I presume, now huge as well, with Sun.
Yeah.
The combined force, but yeah, pretty low, actually.
Right.
HTC are improving, apparently, but Google's still pretty low.
Mm.
What will happen?
It's depressing.
Yeah. Screw Java, basically.
Screw Oracle.
Well, yeah, we knew it before, didn't we? That's not a surprise. Then, but,
yeah. No, I've never said it openly before. I've always had my suspicions.
Yeah, the problem is, Java is now definitely bad. Definitely bad.
Well, I always thought it was a bit pants on the desktop anyway, so now there is the...
Is that worse than mono?
That's the thing.
And that's all the news.
Yeah. Oh.
And it's now time for our awesome You Dare Us challenge, which the last fortnight was to play the brilliant, wonderful NetHack game in whatever form you wanted. And even Mike has been able to get involved in the few days since he's been in the office.
Just a couple of days.
In between reading his thousands of emails and replying in German. We didn't really... We had to try and finish it or die in the most weirdest way. I don't know. But we all had fun playing NetHack.
I didn't.
Paul ended up hating it, yet Paul played it by far the most out of all of us.
Paul was actually closest to getting the goblet of amulet of Kronos or whatever it's called.
In fact, Paul, it's probably good that you start because then we'll get a good overview of what the whole game involves. I have no idea.
Oh, good. Leave it to me then, eh?
Well, which version did you play?
3.4.3,
I think. Interface.
Yes, I used the cute... QT interface, yeah, which itself I think dates from NetHack 1 because it was really quite nasty and actually broken in places, but I sort of persevered quite a lot with it. Alright, so as a brief summary, if you've never played NetHack before, it's spawned from an older generation of hack games. It's very, very old, like Rogue. You travel around a dungeon made of little characters, or in my case, actual little tiny pictures in the QT interface, and usually get killed very, very frequently. That's how the game works. The idea is you go down deeper and deeper into a dungeon. The Dungeons of Doom or something, I think what they call them. Deeper and deeper and deeper to try and find the Amulet of Yendor, which you then sacrifice to your god of choice, and you win the game.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Along the way, you will find lots of beasts to kill you, lots of magical spells that you think are good that probably kill you.
Yeah.
Lots of swords that are probably cursed and may kill you.
things to eat that may kill you.
Yes, there are. Yeah. Basically, it's a recurring theme of things that will kill you. You set a character class, sort of like Dungeons & Dragons style. You can be like a human or a dwarf or an elf or whatever. You can have a skill like a warrior or a wizard. You can be an archaeologist. You can be a tourist.
You can be a tourist, yeah.
You got all sorts of different
They all have different strengths, don't they? If you different start as a tourist, ones. You're a bit dumb, but you have a lot of money and a lot of food.
I think you get darts, yeah. You get some things you can't get. We can't specialise in some weapon types.
Right, yeah.
An archaeologist can use all those damn statues, which is quite helpful.
I was a gay barbarian.
Barbarian.
Yeah. That's a gay being option.
No, I added it.
Okay.
Pack the source code.
The power of open source. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Take it from there, Graham.
Well, I did actually play with the source code a little bit to give myself lots and lots of hit points because I found it impossible. Really, really impossible.
It is impossible.
And in fact, giving myself 277,435,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, Well, and I played the console version because that was the only one I could get to compile. And even that was a task, getting it to compile. I had to patch it so that it would work with AutoMake. But that's a different story.
Really?
Yeah. It's from the years before AutoMake.
Yes, it is. It's from the years, before Linux. Make.
Yeah. C, GCs.
There's all kinds of if-depth Amigas in there. It's quite cool.
Oh, there will be, won't there? I mean, yeah. It's been around since the early 80s. I was looking at a few guides for it because it's so complicated and there's so many things to do. And the guides are hilarious. They kind of help to describe how the game works. Here's one quote from the guide. Vorpal Blade has a 5% chance of beheading any target which possesses a head each time it hits, with no way to defend against this attack. If you must fight someone who has Vorpal Blade, either attack them from long range or polymorph into something which doesn't have a head.
Yeah, of course.
Simple as that. Now you know. But there were hundreds and hundreds of tips and hints and secrets about NetHack.
Sysadmins of old mustn't have done any work.
Yeah.
All they must have been doing is adding things. You know, once they'd finished NetHack, they'd go back into the source code and add something else and then play it again.
But I think finishing it is really rare. This guide I was reading, this guy knew an awful lot about NetHack, and he said he's played it roughly around, gone through it around 300 times. Only once has he ever ascended, which means to get that amulet and actually win. So it's very, very rare, even for skilled players, to actually get that far.
Just to clarify, it has insta-death, which means once you are dead...
Yeah,
you're out.
Yeah, that's
not coming
it.
Back. No,
there's no
chance.
No saves.
Continue or anything like that.
I had a save option on the QT one.
Oh, that's cool.
Does save.
Yeah, right. On the console. But the hardest part on the console was that the direction controls are obscene.
Oh, yeah. Really, JKL.
I know, but then when you want to fire a bolt, which key do you press for upper left? No.
Yeah, and so they're all adjacent to one another on the keyboard, so there's no... actual physical up, down, left, right. You have to kind of, it's left and right or on the far left and right of the four keys with up and down in the middle. And when you're running away from a monster or you're trying to avoid something, you always make the mistake of going completely the wrong way.
Yeah.
And it's very deeply frustrating. And one of the main reasons for not using the console version.
What level did you get to? Level four, was
it? It wasn't very far. Yeah. I played it for about an hour and a half. I quite liked it. I could, you know, I played it a long time ago and it wasn't so bad, but I didn't get so deeply frustrated with it as you did.
Yeah. I actually, Jeremy Ford from PC Format magazine came by SysDemag, and he's used to playing first-person shooters all the time, and he said it's pretty good. So I think you can really get into it. I mean, I can see it from a time... Today we've got infinite distractions with the internet, and we can fire up an emulator and play all sorts of classic games. But back in the times when you had no internet, you were just sitting at your Unix terminal, no bitmap display,
be good then.
Yeah, you think, what can actually use up my time for the next 2 hours? What can I really get involved in and write down stuff on bits of paper and all these little tricks and stuff. Back in the day, imagine it would have been
very things
engrossing.
Like secret doors. You know, I get lost looking for a staircase, thinking I've explored a whole level and then have to go around everywhere pressing S, I think it was. Just, oh, there's the door. What was I thinking? And then it would be locked and then I need to find a lock pick, which I didn't have. So I killed the shopkeeper.
I'm surprised that worked, because the first time I came across a shopkeeper, I tried to kill him, but I just died.
You needed 277 million hit points.
What about you, Andrew? This is your first time playing it?
Yes, I'd never played it before. I played the QT version. and got to experience level 4, which I've got no idea whether that's good or bad or what.
There are 20 in total.
All right, then.
So you said there were 50 levels?
No, experience
levels. Experience levels. Oh, experience.
Quite, Mike.
I'm clearly in the bottom 20% of the games. But no, I didn't really get on with it too well. I got killed by Lycan.
Okay.
And I got killed by those bugs, and I got killed by a jackal, but it was the icon was a question mark, so I didn't know what had killed me until after it had killed me. I found that quite frustrating.
Well, that's the thing. Occasionally you can get blinded or darkness because it attacks you.
Oh, yes. Right. No, that's because I ate Newt and it made me go blind.
There you go.
Looking through the source code, the best way of dying I found was unrefrigerated sip of juice.
Well, next time, just, you know, add lots of return false to all these functions and you'll be fine. Yeah. Not, no. So I got to dungeon level 24. Which is quite far down. I died so many times. It was really frustrating. I now actually hate the game. And there are a few times where I didn't die. I got to level 16 or so, but I gave up anyway because I'd eaten a leprechaun. The leprechaun did their best to annoy me by stealing your money. So when they hit you, they steal half your money away, you know, 400 gold pieces, and teleport when they steal your money. They disappear. All you see is your pockets feel lighter. Leprechauns. I was hunting them down, trying to kill them all. And eventually I came across, which figures really, the game must have known what I was doing, an army of leprechauns. A leprechaun den. It's a room with 20 leprechauns in. I hacked and slashed them all, and I took my revenge on them by eating them all. They were dead once and for all I ate them. But when you eat a leprechaun, you gain his teleport ability. But it's not even controlled teleport. You're walking along, bzz, you just teleport. And it was really dangerous because you teleport into a room full of orcs or something or whatever in the middle of nowhere and teleport. But I actually gave up because I could no longer complete any meaningful mission to just teleport all the time to useless places. So that really irritated me. Anyway, level 24, I gave up because I kept meeting a Nazgul who sucked levels out of you. So, and he was basically invincible from what I could tell. I couldn't do anything about it. So unless you
had the ring, presumably.
Well, yeah. The thing is, you can collect the rings because it is ripped off from the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
You can collect them.
I did see the hobbits actually in the dungeon.
I killed a few of them. Yeah. So
that's why.
Yeah, I've been doing the job for them, you see. So Nazgul, if you see them, stay away from them because they're really, really hard and not very nice. The best bit of the QT level actually is about level 5. Maybe we didn't see this, Andrew. It says something like you go back to an older time, it feels like, and it changed the QT display to have little ats and dashes.
Wow.
And stuff.
So you're back in the ASCII,
for one level, and they go back to the QT level again. It's back to normal. Fortunately, I didn't die by anything embarrassing. I died by a Nazgul. I died by my leprechaun. But fortunately, I didn't die by a kitten. That's the worst one I think you can die by. But seriously, there are kittens straggled around.
And my pet was a kitten. One time.
Yeah, you get kittens on dogs, don't you? Or some of the knights have ponies.
But it was a K, anyway, whatever that was.
Right.
Well, here's a hint. I was playing as a Valkyrie dwarf because they're the easiest one to play. So if you want to give it a try, play as a Valkyrie dwarf.
Valkyrie dwarf?
Valkyrie dwarf. Now you know, they are the easiest to play.
And, it was good. It wasn't.
It was bad. Nah, die.
Right. Next time.
Next challenge. Next challenge. Then.
It says, it says written down here, this is my idea. It wasn't my idea.
It was your... What? It was your idea.
You cannot blame me. Our next challenge is quite a big one. The challenge is to write a game. It can be a rubbish game.
It will be a rubbish game.
It can be the idea of a game written on a back of a piece of paper. But we're going to give ourselves 4 weeks to do it. So that's the podcast after this. We'll report on the final game. And the next podcast, it's our plan to give a kind of halfway through synopsis of how things are going or how little we've actually done, which is what will happen. So for our next challenge, it's to actually write
a video game.
Open source game
for Linux.
I've never done it before. I've no idea what I'm going to do. Paul's done a few, and so's Mike. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Oh yeah, I can dig out one of my Python projects.
Well, from scratch, preferably. Mike.
Oh, all right.
I did write a horse racing game for the Acorn Electron.
Cool.
You'd try and port that, couldn't you? And with such challenges that make me happy I'm not here on holiday in 4 weeks' time, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, there's going to be another week, compared by Mike Saunders, in the hot seat, where it's me, and not open ballot, which is replaced by something even better and even cooler. It'll make you never want an open ballot again.
Hooray!
All right, discovery of the week / fortnight, because I've only been back in the Linux world for 2 days. I've been kind of, you know...
Isn't it Thursday today?
Oh, yeah, it is. 3 days. I've been scurrying around trying to catch up on things. And what I did miss while I was away was that the Amiga turned 25 years old on July the 24th. That was when the... good background music, please carry on. Yeah, the Amiga 1000 was launched on July the 24th, 1985.
Wow.
Quarter of a century.
I remember 1985.
What happened in 1985?
It was black and white.
Was it? It was the olden days. Yeah. You could leave your back door open.
And the worst thing is, it was only 8-bit black and white.
Was it? Oh, that's the worst.
Not if you had an Amiga.
I had an A600 and later an A1200. And
I had an A1000.
Did you actually have a 1000?
I didn't buy it. When I was at college a few years later, I didn't have a computer, and someone very generously lent me their A1000.
Cool.
And I used that as my main machine for the year.
I've got a 1200, so mine's 200 better than yours.
It was bad. I used it really just as with Xterm. Was it Xterm? Or what was the Amiga terminal application called anyway? I used that mainly to...
The Amiga shell, wasn't it?
Was it A-Term?
I think it might have been.
Yeah, wow. There we go.
It was very good terminal Same application.
The KDE Preston there a little bit, aren't they?
Anyway.
Yeah, so that's what I've discovered.
Cool discovery.
Many of those days were shameful, like the SCOM days. Don't really like to think about it.
Commodore were a rubbish company at the end, but yeah, that's their fault. Anyway, Graham.
Shall I go next? I've got two discoveries.
Ooh.
So the first for me. The first, which everyone might already know, I'm sure, is apt-get build-dep. Which I needed to install...
Oh, NetHack, of course.
NetHack.
Yes.
Because I was building... It installs all of the source files as the dependencies for the package. So with NetHack, I wasn't installing the NetHack package, but I was going to build it. Apt-get build-dep installed all of the development files that I'd need to compile the application.
Oh, dash dev things,
exactly,
and
yeah,
live
yeah,
headers and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah. So that I didn't have to install anything else, just the source file. Mm. Although it was still difficult to install after that. The second one is a little bit more esoteric. I use Squeezebox at home, which is running from a Linux server running a music server, which is all streamed to a Squeezebox. And there's now a Spotify plugin for Squeezebox so that you can use your Linux machine to browse Spotify if you've got a premium account on your Squeezebox, which I haven't got a premium account, but it's very, very tempting. Unfortunately, my NAS box doesn't have an Intel processor, which is the requirement for it. That's it.
Oh,
is it your A1000?
I think it is. It's a PowerPC-based NAS box, so there's never a chance they're going to release that. The lib Spotify that the Spotify people provide for Linux is Intel only.
Oh, right.
There's a PowerPC Mac version. But so obviously they could just press the button and do it if they wanted.
Yeah. Oh,
I have two as well. Mm. The first one was actually emailed to me from a chap called Owen Emerson, who'd heard my Python rant. In fact, he calls it my hot seat rant about Python. Okay. And it was about discoverability. And I said, well, I don't like the fact that I can't guess things in Python very easily because it hasn't got... So for example, in C#, you can do a class followed by a full stop, and it will just help you out with stuff, or you can find it's all grouped together. Whereas in Python, you haven't got that. It's just function name, basically. It does like PHP, but at least I know PHP, so I don't have to discover it again. Anyway, he said, check out IPython at ipython.scipy.org/moin, and it is, and he calls it, an enhanced Python shell that gives you the completion features you mentioned that were missing. Mm. It uses Python introspection to figure out what's available and makes it easily to
That's really
available.
Cool.
It is really cool, yeah. So IPython, give that a try, I think, and recommend
you
do the same.
It's like the normal interactive Python shell prompt, but you
just better.
You can... Cool. Yeah,
better. And the second thing is Gnabaretny.
Who?
Exactly. So ages ago, there was a marketing guy who figured that what we really want is a symbol, which is an exclamation mark and a question mark combined. For all those times you want to write question mark, question mark, exclamation mark, you know, are you sure?
Right.
Kind of thing, you know, together. So it's one symbol, and it's called an interrobang, and it's a question mark and an exclamation mark overlaid on each other. Now, the problem is, if you're from a country like Spain, where they have upside down question mark and an ending question mark, how do you do it? Well, actually, that's a gnabaretni. with an interrobang, and you've got the symbol. It's an actual Unicode symbol. You can type it.
It exists.
Yeah, it's great. I used it on Twitter.
Wow.
Gnabaretni.
I never saw it when we were looking through lists of Unicode characters to put in our Google chat statuses. Right, ASCII art. It's cool.
Top that if you can.
Can you beat that, Andrew?
No.
Oh, well.
No, I can't. What's the next section? Go home. I did discover something, though.
Cool.
Yeah, it was quite cool. It's Z-Snares.
Z-Snares. I love Z-Snares.
Playing NetHack really made me pine for a decent, actual, proper game that involved druids or any nonsense like that. So I installed Z-Snares. Actually, no. First of all, I installed DOSBox and then realised I'd forgotten how to work DOSBox because you need to use, like, enter DOS commands on the DOS command line. And every time I play with DOSBox for a while, I always learn a little bit of DOS and then forget it whenever I get bored with Frontier or whatever it is that I've been playing. But Z-Snares is really, really easy. There's a graphical interface.
Mm.
It sort of, you just load it up and then it comes up with a file browser and you click on where your files are that you want to play and then you double click and then it plays. It's how everything should be.
It's how all pirated ROMs should be played.
Well, I wouldn't know about that, Graham.
Is that public domain ROMs?
Of course there are.
For developers.
Yes, you know. Absolutely right.
Z-Snares is my favourite program of all time. I remember using that in like the very early 2000s on a Cyrix 233 machine, you know, pretty naff processor, but it still did perfect SNES emulation then, absolutely to the beat. And like you say, it's got a great interface. It's got all sorts of cool cheat things you can use as well. You can say, take a snapshot of all the numbers in RAM, play the game for another few seconds, and then see what's changed. So you can actually find all the bits of memory of the SNES that change from one state to the other. So you can find cheats. You say, so this is how high this player is on a level. And then you can make Yoshi float in Mario Kart, which is what everybody wants to do. You can really mess around with games that way.
Not that Mike has a Mario Kart ROM he plays.
Is Mario Kart?
I've got Mario Kart.
Is that one of the public sector?
Is it public sector cuts coming to some Mario Kart? Yoshi's lost his job.
He now has to fly around the track.
No more blue shells.
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Right, it's now time for In the Hot Seat. This episode's victim is Paul, but first we need to construct a very special Wheel of Destiny.
Python?
Which Andrew is going to do for us. Here are the pieces.
Excellent. Let me whip out my tools.
Ow!
That'll do.
Fantastic. Thanks. That's brilliant, Andrew.
You're welcome.
It only has two things on it.
Yes!
But it's more Ubuntu. It can't be even more Ubuntu. Well, okay, so choice number one is, I can't read your writing, Ubuntu lovers.
Ubuntu lovers.
Ubuntu lovers. People love Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And choice number two is Ubuntu haters. I see where you're going with this.
In the interests of being fair and balanced, I had to include Ubuntu haters. But to accurately represent the proportion of people who hate Ubuntu, I've only made it a very small sliver of the wheel.
True.
Well done. Yin and yang.
But mostly yin. Well, do you want to spin your wheel then?
Yeah, cool. I guess, will you put a good soundtrack in there, Graham?
Yeah. Whoosh! Oh, it's a bunch of haters!
Oh,
no. We should have made that even smaller. Okay, well, hopefully our listeners will know the rules, but we do get occasional people writing in saying they don't know the rules. So it works like this. I have exactly 1 minute to talk about Ubuntu haters. I can't stop, breathe, whatever. In the meantime, if I do, or if 1 minute expires, then Mike here will squeak, on our squeaky ball, which is back. Yes.
Mike is the squeaky ball.
Whoa!
It's just part of me.
We didn't have the squeaky ball last time.
No, when Mike was away, we didn't have it.
Really?
Coincidence?
It was a problem.
So.
Okay. Ready?
Yes.
3, 2, 1, go.
Ubuntu haters. So I edit the Linux format, as you know, and every issue we get letters from people saying that we are owned, run, staffed by, whatever, Canonical, who makes Ubuntu, which happens to be the world's leading Linux distro. And usually I start writing a response to these people in the letters page, and it gets flamier and flamier and flamier, and eventually I go, no, screw it, and just throw the whole thing away and start from scratch. I've done that so many times that each time I say, go on, just prove it. Just tell us how we're possibly paid by Canonical, why we write so much about Ubuntu. We don't. We really, really don't. We cover so little Ubuntu in the magazine in general. We like it. It's a nice distro, but it changes so very little compared to other distros. There's nothing to get angry about, nothing to get so upset about, nothing to attack people about. This is what Shuttleworth called tribalism. It's a bad thing. We want to try and eliminate it from the magazine if possible. Our numbers say that 2/3 of our readers use Ubuntu. We should be covering it 2/3 of the time, but we don't. We cover it only a fraction of that time. So stop your whinging. If your distro isn't as good, get over it. Stop whinging at our distro.
Ta-da!
But still buy the magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
yeah, write it. People write in. But my one is write in, and I read your emails. We really do read all your emails.
We do. Yeah, and stuff posted on the forums as well.
We may not agree with you. We usually don't agree with you.
Sometimes we print them out and put them on the big notice board of stupid emails.
Yeah.
We do.
It actually says stupid emails above it.
It's a really big notice board. In fact, it's so big, I think it's got its own gravity field now. It's like it's
all going to have to fire someone to make
space. And all those eggs and tomatoes are starting to smell.
Yes. We do read them. So... And actually, last week I was thinking of switching to Fedora. And I
really?
Thought, nah. So, like usual, we've been too lazy to post an open ballot. But that's all right because we have an all new, all better, fantastic section. It's unbelievable, isn't it, Mike?
Did you get the memo about this, Graham?
No, I didn't see anything of it.
Oh wow!
And I was under the desk.
It is called "Whose Geek Is It Anyway?" And we have four games, which our brave contestants Andrew, Mike, and Graham will play. I'll explain the rules, and you have to see how it works out. It might be rubbish, in which case, in 2 weeks, open ballot. Hey. The first game, here are the rules. The first game is called Alphabet. It's very simple. Each sentence must begin with a subsequent letter of the alphabet. For example, Graham here will start, then he'll go to Mike, and then Andrew, then Graham, then Mike, then Andrew, then Graham, then Mike, then Andrew. And Graham will start with A. Your whole
sentence starts with A.
Then yours is B, Mike, then yours is C, then yours is D, then yours is E. And whoever gets Q is basically screwed. Or X.
Can we use umlaut?
No Q would be fine, actually, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm sure. We'll find out. Anyway. Anyway.
Q-tears.
Anyway. So, there's a scene. You must stick to the scene and discuss the scene. And and the only rule is alphabet letters, okay?
All right.
Graham, you're going first. The scene is, you have just installed KDE 4.5. Take it away.
A great success.
But it could go a lot further.
Crap, I've just installed KDE. Damn, is that GNOME?
Excellent. I've got K-Jumping Cube.
Fail. I've got K-Jumping Cube. Graham, must try harder.
Help. I don't know how to uninstall this desktop from my computer.
I'll help. Jump for joy.
KDE's back.
The K's the easiest one.
LMMS was in the repository somewhere. I should have installed that.
Multimedia player?
No, there's no reason to install that.
Person are you?
Oh,
there you go.
Opera.
Graham, Pete.
Pity it's not orange.
Cute is an interesting toolkit, though.
Right there.
Sugar.
Taking time to set up KDE properly is important, though.
Usability is of paramount importance.
Very good.
Window managers are not at all as good as proper desktop environments like KDE.
Is that a wasp that's just come in?
Why?
Zed Shell, the perfect compliment to KDE.
Well done. Not bad.
It worked.
So, the second game. This time we're going the opposite direction. So Andrew first, then Mike, then Graham, then Andrew, Mike, Graham. It's called Questions Only. Two people, Andrew and Mike at first, must only ask questions. If one is too slow or you don't ask a question, or if it's a very, very lame question, i.e. a statement with a rising voice at the end, I will sound the squeaky ball. And the third person, i.e. Graham, will jump in to take that person's place. So if Mike, you're too slow, Graham will take your place. If Andrew, you're too slow, keep on going.
So don't answer his question. I just ask another question. All of...
Yes, but relate to his question if you want to. Okay. You have to tie it in somehow, but it has to be a question.
Did you threaten to overrule him?
The question is not whether.
So, here's the scene. You're both at a lug meeting for the first time. Andrew, take it away.
Hey there, do you come here often?
Well, what distribution do you use?
What distribution do you use?
Has yours got a really good window manager?
Has it ever? Is that a question?
No, it's not! Graham, you're in!
So do I have to pretend to answer Mike's question? In
Carry
my
on
answer?
To Mike's question.
I use... don't I use the same one as you?
Have you read up about it in Linux Format magazine?
Can you buy it here?
Do you live in the United Kingdom?
Andrew,
is the Isle of Man part of the United Kingdom? I work for Canonical, that's where I live.
Do you believe in a federalised Europe?
Does the Pope run KTE?
Is it possible to love a distro too much?
You're out! Graham, take over.
Is Mandriva still in business?
Has Mandriva ever been in business?
isn't it better than Fedora?
Have you ever used Fedora?
Oh, dear. Does Fedora still use GNOME?
Does GNOME still exist?
Are the GNOMES in the wild?
Is GNOME better than KDE?
Are KDE elves better than GNOME elves?
I don't get the hang of it. And Mike is out! Finally beaten! And with that, on to our next game, our final game, infomercials. All three of you will your job to advertise the release of Ubuntu 10.04 LTS. So it's an infomercial, which means you can sell it as aggressively as you want to.
Okay.
Go all out. We'll have who first? Andrew?
Yeah.
Andrew first, then Graham, then Mike. So Andrew, you say your part. When you're finished, you should open up a piece of paper which has a prompt for you. A feature you really have to try and explain is why it's so great. Ubuntu 10.04 is so awesome. It's on that bit of paper. When you're finished, pass on to Graham, who will also have a bit of paper with a prompt on explaining what his favourite feature of 10.04 is. And then you pass it on to Mike.
So we have to talk about these features
as if they're the killer feature. The killer feature of Ubuntu 10.04 is open the paper.
So we're selling Ubuntu 10.04. Yes.
Not 10.4.
10.04.
10.04. Sell it as much as you want to, then open the paper and sell that. Then Graham, then Mike.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll hand out your prompts now. Mike, there's yours. Andrew, let's check. Yeah, that's yours. Keep it quiet for now. It's a secret for now. And Graham, that's yours. Andrew's an infomercial. You've seen him before, haven't you? TV, QVC or something?
God, that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Well, we've got here a lovely Ubuntu. It's perfect for anyone you know who uses a computer. If your auntie uses a computer, or your brother or your sister, even your mum or dad, it's perfect for all the family, especially if they're animal lovers, because Ubuntu names their version numbers after animals. This one, for example, is a lynx. It's a lucid lynx, not just any kind of lynx. You can get KDE on it if you wanted to. It comes with a free coaster, which is round and it's shiny on one side. It's purple. The window buttons are on the left-hand side, but if you want, you can put them back to the right-hand side. You can do anything, really. Well, no. But by far the best feature is the GIMP.
Is that included?
If you've been to the zoo and taken a photograph of a lynx, or your auntie, or your uncle, or any one of those aforementioned potential Ubuntu users, you can take the red eye out of their pictures. And you can do it in red and green and blue.
But you can take the green eye out of pictures?
Yeah.
Cool.
And you can edit all sorts of pixels with it, but not lines. And Graham, What do you, just over to you.
Well, for my feature, you really have to picture yourself sat by a swimming pool somewhere in the south of Spain. You've got a fantastic cocktail on the go. It's really warm. The last few days of summer in England where it's raining and about 18 degrees. Here it's 32 degrees and you've got your laptop on your lap. You're sick of all the brown and the purples and all that rubbish that goes into the standard Ubuntu desktop. What you need is some Azure Blue, and there's only one desktop that provides. That's KDE 4.5 in your Ubuntu repository. Install it now.
Wow, amazing. Well, I've got to say Ubuntu is a completely, completely amazing distribution. And I think that it's the very fact that it uses this awesome package management system, but you can actually install another package management system, if you like, as well, called RPM. And I used to have problems with my back and everything, but since I've installed RPM, everything's changed. I sleep better. My wife is more attractive. RPM is really the solution to everything. It's unbelievable.
Thank you very much. And with that, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget all the notes.
Oh, moment, Mal. What's this? Look, I may have been gone away for a lot of time and may only be thinking in German now, but I still remember that I've got to do one more thing.
Whoa.
Haven't I?
That's commitment.
Yeah. Remember we were talking about the Amiga before?
I want to
hear from you guys. When was Linux ported to the Amiga?
Ooh. 1992.
Andrew says 1992?
Very, very early on, because Linus loves it.
I'd have to say, I mean, I'm going to say the same as Andrew, but I'm going to have to go for 94.
In before 93. I'll say 93.
Paul was right by 93. Andrew was right that Linus did love it as well. It was actually based on kernel 0.99 patch level 9. And it was a really early port in 93 where hardly anything worked. But a year later, they got Ethernet and the X server working and proper Amiga love from there onwards. So great computer with a great operating system. Them were the days.
Amiga was great, wasn't it?
Did love the Amiga so much. Workbench. There is a Workbench window manager out there called AmiWM. It hasn't been updated in a billion years, but I might try and update it myself one day.
It's so brilliant, actually. It's a really good window manager.
It is really good, but it misses a lot of like modern window hints and stuff. So if you open the GIMP, all its palettes have like individual...
But you can pull down Workbench.
Yeah, you can. What we all remember and love.
With such memories of the golden days, we come to the real end of our podcast, all the notes, such as they are on the website, once Graham writes them. And we, of course, love your comments. Please email us, paul.hudson@futurenet.com, or ping us on Twitter, or Identica, or come round our houses.
Yep.
We like guests.
in Monaco, where we live, with all this canonical money. Yeah.
And we will see you in 2 weeks with a stage report on our awesome game.
Hey.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Bye. It's such a nice day to be on.